It's Wrestling Observer Radio. Garrett Gonzalez here with Dave Meltzer and our special guest, who is, he has a match on October 24th at Bound for Glory, a title match against Eric Young. Rich Swann, how's it going?
Oh, it's going very well. How are you today?
Pretty good. So I'll kick it off and then, you know, we can actually get this going. I'm sure Dave has a ton of questions as well, but I was kind of just thinking back about your injury and just the year and sort of the pandemic, and then you're now back and you have a title match upcoming next month. Like, it seems like it's been a kind of a whirlwind for everybody, but also, you know, I can't imagine being injured during the pandemic and quarantining and such. But how are you feeling, like, mentally, physically, like all that, with everything that's happened this year?
Oh, you know, man, like, it was a mental roller coaster. Everything was broken in January. It seemed my ankle, my fibula, my L5, my L6, my foot completely was just demolished. You know what I'm saying? And for a bit, I didn't think that I was going to be able to wrestle due to what the doctors were saying to me. But with hard work and dedication, came back and... you know, like, the pandemic is one thing, but once I got injured and everything, it was just, everything was going to be gone and taken away. You know that feeling? And like, everything was gone and taken away from everybody due to the pandemic. WrestleMania weekend, you know, so many people lost so much. But, you know, I'm just picking myself up and going forward.
So now, kind of explain what happened when you got hurt. Because, I mean, I remember hearing that you tore your Achilles, but it was much worse than just that.
Oh, yes, indeed. So basically, I was standing up and I got sentoned. And so my Achilles was crushed like a soda can. My ankle was just like, it was placed up into my shin. My foot was just peeled back. The other side of my ankle on the right side was just up in my calf. Then my fibula broke clean, and it was almost similar to the Psycho Sid. You know, everybody's familiar with that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most horrific injuries in the industry. But yeah, it was very similar to that. My fibula was broken clean, and it was broken to where the point where the bone was just sticking at the skin, and it was almost a compound fracture. And so I had my mind on that, and then I didn't even realize that my back was also fractured as well. So once I got the CAT scan and the MRIs and everything, that was, you know, brought up as well to my attention. And it was rough, man.
I mean, it sounds horrible. Now, what kind of phases did you go through, and when did you realize that you would be able to come back? Because when you have all those injuries at the same time, I mean, it's almost like, oh my God, like, you know, I mean, like, you know, and you've had more than your share of bad luck during your life anyway, but it was just like, just not another one, right?
Yeah, it was like everything was just starting to get back on the roll. You know what I'm saying? I was just starting to get my feet back, like, planted in this industry, starting to make waves, starting to have matches, revolutionary matches. And, you know, once that momentum is taken away, if you're off TV for 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks, sometimes that can be an eternity, and that can be a detriment to your career. And not only that, just an injury like that, like, man, it's just hard to go into it. It's hard to explain just because of how, like, crazy it was. But once I figured, you know, the doctor got the surgery, Dr. Chan, who's one of the greatest out here in Orlando, I got the surgery, And, you know, he told me that, you know, due to the effects and, you know, how it was and how severe the injury, that I could be walking with a limp for the rest of my life. And there's not many, you know, and anybody that, you know, has those problems, you know, but like for an athlete, if you have a limp, that's your career. You know, I want to go out and perform to the best of my ability, you know.
When, I mean, are there things that you have to modify, and what kind of pain level are you in right now?
Oh, man. If it's cold outside, I know it. If it's going to rain, I know it. Because I have plates and not screws, they're buttons. And it's three iron rods across my ankle, the two buttons, a steel plate in my foot, and yeah. Doctor told me I was going to get arthritis. I totally feel it. But at the same time, when you push and you go through hard work and you get your running and your exercises in, you know, with a little bit of pain, rehabilitation, like ice and everything, it's something that I can manage, especially for something that I love so much.
So speaking of rehab, like how does one rehab for a lot of the time? Because I imagine after your surgery, I'm not exactly sure when that was, but I would imagine most of this was during the pandemic. So how do you rehab what sounds like a bunch of different crazy injuries when, you know, we're sort of staying inside the house for the most part?
Yeah. So it was just a lot of rest and a lot of just talking with people that I'm close to and them just getting my mind right and me just taking the time to, you know, study on athletes that have been injured in this way and how they've come back. And I applied that in my physical therapy training, and my physical therapy training was very intense, and it was only about 3 weeks. But after the doctor had told me that I was going to be walking with a limp for the rest of my life, I was determined to go home and prove him wrong, like I've done on so many aspects of my life. And I just wasn't going to have something that I, you know, like just hold so near and dear to my heart be taken away off of this injury. So I was in my house just running up and down the rooms in the kitchen and just trying to, you know what I'm saying? And it took a long while to get to that point. It was just a lot of elevation, and my foot was in a cast for a whole month, my whole leg. So, but man, it's crazy.
When do you think, because when you started, I mean, when you started in wrestling, your size was a lot more of a detriment than it would be today because the business has changed a lot. Do you think that mentality of overcoming, because I'm sure that when you started, there were people going like, hey, you can perform, but, you know, you're never going to get anywhere because you're too short.
Oh, 100%.
Do you think that helped you when someone says you can't and you just go, I'll find a way, I can?
Yeah, it totally did, because that's just my mindset, my drive, my motivation. When somebody tells me that I can or you'll never, I want to show them that I will do and that I will, you know. And that drive it's just been instilled in me just since I was a little kid, you know.
So now with this pay-per-view coming on the 24th, I mean, like you've been through all this. And this is the first time you're headlining. I mean, you're the main event championship match on a major pay-per-view. I mean, isn't that kind of like a weird feeling that somehow through all this, I mean, you've been on, you know, you've been on big, big shows before, but never in the actual main events, right? The advertised main event, because at the last pay-per-view, you were a surprise in the main event. So, yeah.
But advertising, yeah, it's a huge feeling, you know. And yeah, I've done, you know, shows and big shows before, and but now it's a new time, and my direction is on Impact Wrestling. And just to be in this position, in this spot, if somebody told me that I'd be wrestling in a main event on a major pay-per-view, that I used to watch some of my favorites, main event and headline, and some of the greatest in the industry have headlined this pay-per-view, and that I'd be in that spot, I wouldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah, and also this is their big show. The Bound for Glory is traditionally the big show of the year for this company.
Yes, yes. And to be put in that position, and especially with somebody like Eric Young, who, you know, I don't agree with his tactics and Impact Wrestling, but I can't take anything away from Eric Young. I've known him now for about 3-4 years, and he's a great talent, and he's wonderful. And to have that moment, and especially with such a rivalry going into this pay-per-view, you know, it's bone-chilling, baby.
When, you know, what is it like for you, since so much of what you do is about appealing to the crowd, having to do a match at this level where you're going to have to either imagine the crowd at home or you know, somehow, you know, do it without that instantaneous reaction?
You know, and people have, you know, brought this up. Oh, how does it feel? How does it feel? Just getting that taste at Slammiversary, seeing how it feels, it's no different than when you're in there with somebody that you love and you're training with somebody that you have, you know, grown up with, and you guys are just going and you're feeling it. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. Because I love this business, I know there's people at home that are going to be paying their hard-earned money to see this, whether they be in the arena, whether they be in the studio or not. I'm willing to go out there and do what it takes, baby. You know what I'm saying?
How was Slammiversary as far as, because I mean, it's another one. So you're in the main event. No one knows but you and probably a few other people that you are. And you know, that was your first match back from the injury, right?
Very first match back.
Yeah.
Like 7 months of just like those first three, like I said, was just like, the first month was just me just salivating, watching all my friends just kill it in the ring. And, you know, Impact just, you know, got the spot on Access, and like everybody's drive is just so hard. And I wanted to be in that, you know what I'm saying? And then like to get myself back up to that moment. And when the things happened with the world championship to where it became vacated, and they called me and I told them, hey, I'm ready to go. I got the clearance. Let's do this. And to be in that main event and like to share the ring with some of the greatest, like Eric Young and Eddie Edwards and Trey Miguel getting a spotlight, and Ace Austin being able to let his star shine. Like, it was great. It was a great feeling, and it felt like I never missed a step.
Do we know if there is going to be an attempt to at least create some noise for that pay-per-view?
I have not heard. That's I don't know. Have you heard anything?
Can you say that one more time?
Have you heard anything about perhaps a production thing of being able to create a crowd noise that night? Or is it just, I mean, have you heard anything, any talk from the company or anything like that about that?
I haven't heard anything about that or what relates to that. I just kind of listen. I kind of come to the building. I do what I love, you know. I stay out of all that stuff. Whatever you want to do production-wise and whatever, however you want to come up and set the platform for us, and we'll come and do the job that we, you know, do.
What was your mood walking out during the last pay-per-view when you just finally went out, you finally hit the ring, you got to do your stuff? What how'd that feel like to you inside?
In the inside, it felt like it was fireworks exploded in my body. Like I was at Walt Disney. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm seeing the finale of the big fireworks show. Like, and to me, it felt like it was like 20,000 people in there. Like, to somebody that has had the opportunity to wrestle in San Antonio at like the Alamo Dome and stuff like that, like I can compare that same feeling, because everybody matched that same intensity, that same feeling. Nobody was coming to go in lazy. We were all putting in that hard work. You know what I'm saying?
The first time I believe that I saw you would have been WrestleMania 31 weekend, because it was out here in the Bay Area where Dave and I live.
Awesome.
And so we were, it was at the fairgrounds, and there they did a bunch of shows at the fairgrounds. So I'm pretty sure that Dave may have been there as well, but I'm sitting there with a friend, and I don't really know anything about Evolve or any of the wrestlers at that point. And so you're about to come out, the Lionel Richie song plays, and you just, like, this entrance, I was just like, who the hell is this guy? And so I'm with my buddy, Alan Cunahan. He's like, oh, this is Rich Swann, blah, 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 blah. And so just that entrance is something that I will never forget, just, you know, as a presence for you. Now, when you kind of came up with this idea to use the song and all of that, did you expect it to kind of be that iconic? Because you can go to YouTube and put your name in it all night long, and there's videos of your entrance, you know, on YouTube.
Yeah, man, like, how that happened, it was me, B-Boy, I want to say maybe Sammy Callahan and Ricochet, and because me and Ricochet had used that for our tag theme in PWG, and B-Boy, he was driving us to the show, and he said, hey man, this is y'all first time team in America, and y'all need something that's going to set the crowd right. What y'all going to come out to? And me and Ricochet were looking at each other, and we're like, man, we don't know. Like, we kind of just come out to the world one song in Japan. Like, No, come on, boys. Y'all need to get something hot. And he pulls out his CD, and he throws it in, and the first song that comes on was Footloose. Oh, get loose, Footloose, kick off your Sunday shoes. And me and Ricochet, we're in the back of the van. We're like, oh man, okay, maybe. All right. And the next song plays, and it's All Night Long, and it's Lionel Richie. And me and Ricochet, we look at each other, and we're like, you know what? For a joke, let's come out to it.
and at that point, it's like a 30-year-old pop song. It's not like something new that's on the radio. It is. That's what I was kind of wondering, was it originally like played for gags a little bit and then sort of became a little bit iconic?
Yeah, like B-Boy was like, you know what? No, this is what y'all coming out to. I'm telling you, this is what y'all coming out to. And we were like, yeah, we'll come out to it. If they look at us, if the crowd looks at us, and little Reseda, we'll turn around and we'll pack our bags and we'll go. But as soon as the All Night Long hit, everybody in that little bar, 400 people sweating, clammed together, just going in on this all night long. And me and Ricochet look at each other like, yo, wait a minute. We have struck gold. Time out. So we're going to Germany. Hey, no, this is our song, All Night Long. Everybody, All Night Long. And just all around the world, bro. Like, all around the world, same song. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
I did not think that it was going to be so iconic, though. Like, just like you said, like, in the beginning, it was just all for fun and all for laughs. And to me, like, I don't see it as iconic because, like, we haven't really done anything super huge yet with it, but man, could you imagine a big event and coming out to All Night Long and the whole crowd singing that? That'd be amazing.
Yeah, it's just bad that era of wrestling is kind of, you know what I mean? Like in the 80s, that was like the big thing, and that was one of the reasons that wrestling in the 80s was so big, was that they used original music before. Mm-hmm. It was funny because it was like wrestling was underground enough that nobody kind of realized it. And then wrestling got so popular and then everybody realized it. And then they had to create, like, you know, unique songs, which, you know, has its good and its bad. I mean, you know, there's, you know, that has its positives too, but, you know, it's just a different era of the business. That's all.
Yeah. If you could come out to like AC/DC or Kiss or something like that, like how they used to, or, you know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, if you related that to the the fans and stuff today and whatever popular music or alternative that's out there. And man, if their favorite wrestler got to come out to their favorite song, it'd be like wrestling was in the 80s again.
So now when you were a kid, what year would you say you started like kind of watching wrestling and kind of getting wrestling?
I'd probably say 95.
Oh, so that late? Yeah.
Yeah, like I was about 5 years old when I started watching. And then after that, though, I just enthralled myself in wrestling, just watching WWF and WCW. And I was fortunate because my brother was a tape trader. So he would bring in like FMW and All Japan and the G1 Climaxes and all of that, like WAR. And I had become like just so like obsessed with wrestling, just watching. I couldn't get enough, you know what I'm saying? I'd stay up, you know, to watch it. Like, that's just how it is, man.
So at what point in your life did you decide you were going to go for it and be a wrestler?
I'd say about maybe 14, mm-hmm. Because there was a wrestling school around my area. It was EWF, and the owner of it was Jim Christian, and he would let me come in, and a couple of my buddies had signed up for the school. And I'm sorry, it was EWA, and it was in Maryland. They let me come into the school, me and my buddies, and practice and clean up the school and help the school out and sell. And as it's well known, my mother and father had passed when I was very young. My father passed when I was 12. And my mother had passed when I was 15. But so at this point in time, when I was 14, Jim Christian and a couple of my friends, they knew that, you know, I could have head into a wrong direction and wrong path, which I was going. And but they took me in and they helped me start my first road at training and everything. And then I had moved to Pennsylvania, and there was no more wrestling training, and my mother had passed. And then my aunt had found a wrestling school in Redline, Pennsylvania. And the trainer there was Adam Flash and Dirty Deeds Darren Wise. And there was also another guy there named Ray Alexander. And they just fell in love with me. They took me under their wings. Like, they took me to all the shows, all the MCWs, the Jersey All Pros, stuff like that, the CZWs. And I just knew that I wanted to put every single thing that I have in wrestling. So I had went to a technical school in Pennsylvania, and I had tested out of your county school of technology. And I just focused on wrestling, just going to all the seminars, all the training schools that I could, all the CZWs or Ring of Honor, seminars, just doing everything I could. And DJ Hyde, the owner of CZW, another guy, took me under his wing and like brought me to my first overseas tour in Germany with WXW. And it was just rolling from there, like just nonstop, you know?
Did you have a backup plan in case, for whatever reason, wrestling wasn't going to work out?
You know, I didn't necessarily have a backup plan. I had gotten a whole bunch of certificates and things like that and my technical schooling, but I didn't go and get like any bachelor's degrees or anything like that. I didn't take the next step and go to college or jump right into my field because I was wrestling already. By the time I was 16, I was traveling all around. So there wasn't really a backup plan. It was just, you better make it or else, you know? And of course I had my side jobs. I worked at Walmart and UPS at the same time, you know, loading boxes and stocking shelves and everything, but there was never any type of plan, which in some people's eyes you would, you know, think is a little stupid and irresponsible, which it is. But at the other side of the sword, you know what I'm saying? If you really want to make it in an industry like this, you really have to put every single thing that you have into it. And that was what my mind and thought process was.
So now when you're in that stage of your career, for people who are starting out, I mean, you were working, like you said, like the two jobs and then mostly wrestling on weekends. Because once you got to, there was a point where like you were going to Japan for, you know, tours and things like that. So that makes it difficult to have like a long-term job. It's like, oh, I got to take a month off every other month to go to Japan.
You know? Yeah. I had got fortunate. So my best friend's mother had worked at a Rite Aid and she was a pretty high manager there. And she helped me out. She knew that this was my dream. And once I started going to like Dragon Gate, what they would do was kind of, I guess, like furlough me or just suspend my, like not suspend, not making anything bad, but just take me off the payroll or whatever. And then once I come back home, like from a 3-month tour, I do like 2 weeks worth of work, you know, and then I'd go back to Japan. And that's how that would work, you know, like I just got lucky with that. But once like the tours in Japan and England and everything started like rolling in, I didn't need a real job after that. It was just wrestling.
How was your original time with Dragon Gate? Did you consider that kind of like a breakthrough? Because now you're like with a company where you're working whatever it is, 4, 5, 6 times a week, as opposed to just like weekends, you know, and you've got a troupe and you've got guys that were, you know, you're like, you know, basically, you know, I don't want to say living with, but you know what I mean? You're touring with people for weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was months at a time. Like the Dragon Gate roster, they became family to me. They taught me, like Shingo especially taught me like the language, taught me how to speak, you know, taught me how to communicate. And then not only that, like Shima, Naruki Doi, Yoshino, Yokosuka Susumu, like all these guys, like they took me under and they taught me the style along with Pac and Ricochet and Uha Nation, who goes by Apollo Crews now. Like they showed us the way. Like that definitely was a total breakthrough. Like it was probably the biggest thing that I've done to date, you know. Like,
because I remember when I saw you the first time in Dragon Gate, and I knew your name because you'd worked for Gabe before that.
Yes.
But it was in Dragon Gate where I actually saw you for the first time. And I remember looking and going like, oh my, I mean, you had so much charisma. Like that was the one thing that you had above so many of these other guys. You know, there's so many guys who are good and can do athletic things, but you had that flair about you. And it was just like, I thought like you were going to be like a complete, I mean, I thought like someone's going to figure out that the height doesn't matter and he's going to be, I was sure you were going to make it pretty big at that, for really the first time I saw you, because you just had that, you had that flair about your whole presentation, everything about it, from the ring entrance, you know, the ring entrance was good and that's to me always a big deal because you look like a star, but then the match starts and you could, you know, you could really go. So
I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I mean, that was when I first like kind of looked at you like in that way. And then when you were in WWE at the beginning, it was like you were, I don't know that they got you at first, but I think that they were starting to get you pretty quick. You know what I mean? Like you could see mm-hmm. that, like in that cruiserweight division at first, you weren't really the guy that they were looking at. But then after a while, it's kind of like, in my mind, and I think that it was in their mind as at some point too, that he's got too much charisma. He's not just a guy in the division, you know. Like, did you get that feeling as time progressed when you were there?
You know, I never really compared myself to anybody in the cruiserweight division or anything, or anybody on that roster, just because, you know, first, they had signed me at NXT before the division, and, you know, I was doing okay, and I didn't have any TV spots or anything like that. And then once they did the Classic, I was so happy that a lot of my friends and a lot of guys that I knew growing up were getting opportunities in one of the biggest companies, if not the biggest company in our industry. And especially for that time, there was no AEW. There was no, you know, Impact wasn't on the rise that it was. Ring of Honor, you know, it was already set. And for guys to get that opportunity at that time, you know, I wasn't even comparing myself. And then when they gave me that opportunity, it was like, wow, all right, well, I'm really going to put my nose to the grindstone and I'm going to step up. You know, that's just kind of how I was looking at it. I was looking at it as there's so many people here in WWE, and I had already been there a year prior before the cruiserweights had even came. To get that opportunity was like, all right, let's do this, you know.
There is a story on your Wikipedia page. Now, the source of that story goes to a WWE story that no longer exists on their website. But it described how you got on their radar. And according to the story, at least partially, it was because of maybe a tweet by Wale. Is that a true story?
That's very true. That's very true. Wale had, I want to say he had came to the Lyceum, a Lyceum show in Dragon Gate in New York. And he had tweeted out the next day that AR Fox, Rich Swann, Ricochet, and UHA Nation, they all need to be on TV. They need to be on somebody's radar. Let's do this. And I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, wait a minute, Wale? Like the rapper Wale? Hold on, tell him how he likes wrestling? Hold on, wait. And from there, like, he was super supportive, and like he helped me out. Like, he got me in contact with Mark Henry, and Mark Henry, another one who just like was just a huge proponent of mine. Just he just helped me out and got me, you know, into the WWE's eyesight, and you know, I just tried to take advantage for every little step.
When you go through, I mean, you've had, like I said, like, I mean, everyone's life has its roller coaster moments, but you've had more than any five people I know, for the most part. You know, between, you know, from the childhood and then all through the wrestling career. I mean, this is like, and this one being the latest one. I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, I don't know what the word was, but you know, you had talked about retiring just a couple of years ago, and I was really happy that you didn't. And I mean, what went through your head at that point?
You know, it was just through the whole social media situation. Everybody thought that they knew what happened with my situation, and they, you know, read things that was glorified. And you know, at that moment, I just was like, you know what? I need to take a step back. I need to find something else to do. Maybe this isn't, you know, for me. Because I had never gotten in trouble in my life. I'd never, you know, experienced anything like that before, especially to with something that I love. And so I sat back and I broke down. And I didn't know what to do. And guys like Tommy Dreamer, Scott D'Amore, Don Callis, Sammy Callahan, my close friend Jason Cade, they would tell me, you know, like, don't do this, don't retire, don't quit, you know, you still got so much. And at the time, I was only, 27, 28, so, you know, you still got so much to give this business. And certain people, you know, coming out and just saying, you know, like, and guys that I look up to and admire and respect, just coming out and reaching out to me, that just made me change my mind. And once I got that second chance, and especially with Impact giving me the platform and the guys inviting me in, and like, there was no way I could give this up. You know what I'm saying?
Now, your wife was already with Impact when this is going down, right?
Yes, yes.
So the story as I know it, and you can correct me, is you went to a show because she was working on the show, and that's when they were like, hey, you know, like, is that kind of like how you kind of first got on their radar?
Can you say that one more time?
Were you just going to, did you just go to a show because she was performing there, and that's when the Impact people said, hey, you know, like, start, you know, how would you like to work here? Is that kind of how it started?
You know, it kind of was. I went to the show in Orlando when they were still at the Impact Zone at Universal Studios. And so Scott D'Amore, you know, he came up to me. Actually, the first show that I went to was the New Orleans show that they did, the Impact versus Lucha Underground. And that was the first time I had met Don Callis, and he called me by name, and I didn't even know he would, you know who I was or anything like that. And I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, he said, you know, there's a spot here if you ever change your mind, if you ever want to come back to wrestling, there's some opportunities here. And that was one of the other things that clicked in my mind. And I was like, you know what, man, let me take my head out of my rear end and let me just do this, you know. And I asked Scott when he pulled me up, and he said, you know, what would you want to do? And I said, I want to work here, and I want to do whatever I can do to help me and help Impact Wrestling. And from there, it's just been an amazing relationship with Impact.
Were you at all worried when you first started that the crowd wouldn't accept you on day one? And how did you feel when they did?
I was very worried, you know. There were certain wrestlers that got themselves into situations, and, you know, everybody has their own life, and everybody goes through their own situations, and how they, you know, take it is how they take it. And for me, I was seeing a lot of the people with the backlash and everything, and I just said, you know, if you want to support me, you'll support me. If you don't, I respect your opinion. I respect, you know, everybody else's opinion on who I am and what they think of me. What you know about me is a different story. And that's what I went in there with, that attitude. And, you know, people, they can see real and fake. And I went out there, and the emotion and the energy that I was just giving off, like, people could feel it. And the reactions that I got from the crowd was amazing. And I was just elated, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just felt great. Like, there was nothing, you know, because it made me know that I made the right decision to continue in this industry.
Go ahead, Garrett.
I was going to say, I understand that you had a conversation with someone you probably were watching as you were growing up, D'Lo Brown, that was pretty impactful in you know, kind of the decision to keep going and to keep doing what you loved. Can you kind of describe that conversation? Because the story that I heard was a really cool story.
Yeah, you know, I was doing my last pro wrestling event. It was the big event in New York. And I was just getting teared up and emotional. People were coming up to me with the action figures and everything like that. And just to feel that type of love, and, you know, it was great. And to leave my table, I come back and I go through, and there was like Hurricane, and I want to say The Godfather, some other guys, and D'Lo was at the end of the table. And I'd only met him a couple of times, you know. And he came, he pulled me aside to his table, and he said, listen, you know, you're a great performer. You're good. You're good in our industry. I think you need to not retire and wrestle. Do what you love. you know, and just hearing that from D-Lo, hearing that from somebody that, you know, has like wrestled since 95 and like the Smoky Mountains, and he's been to All Japan, he's been on Monday Night Raw, he's been everywhere, you know, and to have him support me was something that was like, you know what, man, like, I gotta do this, I have to, you know.
I mean, as far as you know, like, do you know what type? And again, it's weird right now because the schedule of a wrestler has never been like this in the history of wrestling. I mean, you know, the old days, you know, was 4 or 5 days a week and everything.
Yeah.
And then with the pandemic, you know, you're, depending on where you are, like with Impact, you're doing a couple of matches every couple of weeks, I guess is kind of what the schedule is, which probably for you in the recovery stage of everything is probably real good for you. But, I mean, do you know how much you think your body can handle, or is it not even an issue at this point?
You know, I think at this point it's not even an issue, because once I had that first comeback after the injury, like that right there just let me know that, oh, I'm right back where I was before I was injured. And, you know, just again, like what I was saying, like going back to that drive, and yeah, we were all quarantined and everything, but I'd made sure, you know, I would have places and stuff that I could go to train once things kind of lightened back up. And, you know, I'm feeling the best that I've ever felt. I'm, you know, getting more jacked by the second in that gym, you know what I'm saying, since we have all this free time. So, you know, like, I feel like I could bump until the bump gods say, hey, no more bumping, you know. But I know in about 10 years that'll probably change.
I know when you brought up Eric Young, you know, obviously early and earlier in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Young is another interesting case, and I know a lot of people are. You know, he went up there, he went to WWE, and you know, for a lot of different reasons. I mean, there's just so many guys there, and it's so easy to get lost in the shuffle unless you're like a physical freak or you know, whatever it is, you just click, and even sometimes when you do click, you know, it doesn't happen. But mm-hmm. but you know, he was there for a couple of years, and they did, you know, essentially nothing with him, but he's a talented, experienced guy who's actually, as people, when people watch Impact now, they kind of can see how good he really is. And if you watched Impact in the old days, you could mm-hmm. also see it. He evolved. I mean, he can do like many different characters and well, and
anything you want. Anything yeah. in the business, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Any role you tell him to do, he's going to figure out a way to do it right. And his timing is good. His wrestling is good. I mean, what, you know, are you pretty happy that you're going to be on your, you know, in a sense, you know, one of the biggest matches of your career with a guy who went through, I mean, it's not, and he didn't go through the path you did, but there's a similarity of, you know, being good, but having to wait your turn and kind of being overlooked, and now the chains are off, I guess, in a lot of ways.
You know, I definitely love the opportunity to work with Eric, because like we said before, he's a guy that can do anything, and just be in a ring with a guy like that, and that's had so many roles in this industry, whether it be in Impact or in WWE, and even though his career didn't pan out, and I could say this for myself, it happens to a lot of us. The, you know, like, even though your career doesn't pan out the way you would want in WWE, he still, you know, he was there. And but the thing is, now him and Impact getting to show, you know, his star and his knowledge of the business and his range, like, you know, like, and then having the opportunity to be in that with him, it's a great feeling, and I can't wait to, you know, show what we put off, you know.
What guys in that company, and I'm sure there's a lot of them, that you would kind of look at and go, I really want to do a program with this guy?
Man, there's so many guys. Definitely Rohit Raju. I think people don't they haven't gotten the chance to see how entertaining this guy is. He's very, very wit and quick on the mic. He's very good. And he got himself in ridiculous shape from when he was in the tag team in the Desi Hedge squad to now. He got himself in amazing shape. And then also Ace Austin, who I think is another guy who's like the future of the business, a guy who I see doing so much in this industry just because he's got so much time and his ideas are like when it comes to, you know, things in this industry and the matchmaking are just revolutionary. And it reminds me, and I know people beat this to death, it reminds me, and I wasn't there, when AJ was in his prime, but it looks like it could be compared to AJ Styles. But, you know, he's not the next AJ Styles. He's going to be the first Ace Austin. You know what I mean? And those are two guys, definitely. And I'd love to work with, I want to work with everybody, you know what I mean? Because I want to tell every single type of story that I can.
What, I mean, like you had talked about, like, your teenage years. And you had, would you say wrestling saved you, or would that not be a fair thing to say?
Oh no, it totally saved me.
Okay,
because if there wasn't wrestling there, and coming from Baltimore, Maryland, there's no telling where I would have ended up, especially with the things I was getting into, like a lot of drugs, a lot of mischievous things, but you know. The people that I've met along the way in wrestling, and they just got me out of that lifestyle, especially with not having the guidance of a parent, you know, at that young age, you know, like you're bound to get into some stuff, but you know, wrestling definitely made sure I kept my nose to the grindstone and I had a purpose in life, you know.
There's a lot of things that have happened in, you know, during the pandemic, and people have, you know, people have short fuses sometimes, and, you know, social media kind of gets out of control because people have more time and stuff than they would have had normally. I think there's just a lot of different things that have happened. I mean, like when you look at some of the stuff that's happened, you know, especially like, you know, Baltimore, growing up in Baltimore, I mean, when you look at some of this stuff, I mean, what's kind of like your take on everything?
You know, like, the world is just, it's crazy right now. But I just kind of try to step back and take everything day by day, and I try to figure out what I can do to help, what I can do to help, and like the Black Lives Matter, or the pandemic, and helping put somebody at ease, and just helping and putting one person in a good mood, one person will put another person in a good mood. And I try to look at it as if we all, you know what I'm saying, just try to come together, then it'll be a better place, you know. But, you know, the world right now, it's definitely, how could I say, like, it's definitely, there's no other better word to say it. 2020's just been crazy. But, you know, we could all find a way to, how could we say, kick out and make the good comeback, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because, I mean, I sometimes think, like, from your perspective, when you see some of the videos, I mean, does it affect you emotionally, or is it, I mean, like, again, because, like, someone like me has no experience like you, but, you know, you try to learn, but you have a certain experience that I could never have, and I was just wondering, like, how that, you know, how does that affect you, so to speak, when you see these things, like, inequality and different treatment, you know what I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, because you're mm-hmm. going to be treated differently, you know, than I am. And a lot of people don't understand that or don't accept that, but I understand that, I guess, just because I know people who've been through it, and there's just different treatment, and it's horrible, it sucks, and everything like that.
Yeah, you know, I just, like I said, like, I take it case by case and day by day. And, you know, like, with the things that are happening, you know, when I see those certain videos, of course, you know, it hits an emotional nerve. But that's going to be with anything. And that you see to that level of violence, that's definitely going to hit an emotional nerve, no matter what color, what creed, what sexuality, you know. And it's just, I feel like we need to all as people step back and just know that we all bleed red, you know, and we all need to find that, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, if we just come together for a common cause, you know, things can change.
To flip this to a completely different subject, what was, kind of tell us going through that period when you worked PWG, did you see that as kind of a stepping stone? Because you're in there, you know, I started going kind of the tail end of your run there, but that whole run, you're in there with like the hungriest, the best guys putting on the best matches anywhere. I mean, it was just a crazy scene, really.
Yeah, it was nuts. You had some of the top guys, you know, Roderick, Adam Cole, like, who was far from cutting his teeth, but definitely making a name, and it shows, you know what I'm saying? You had guys like Drake and Sammy, myself, Ricochet, and, you know, like you said, like, that time was just, like, crazy. It was nuts, like, the bar was set to an extremely high level, and it was definitely a stepping stone, because you knew that once somebody had posted that, or once PWG had posted that Battle of Los Angeles preview video or failure to communicate or whatever they posted, whatever crazy show name that they could, you know, come up with, they knew that people were going to be watching, and the most important people at that were watching. You know what I'm saying? Like, PWG, it was a good time.
Obviously, your career is still in the mix. You know, it's not, you're not close to being done. But when you look back at some of the stuff that you did when you were younger, is there a specific time that stands out as maybe your favorite time in the wrestling business?
Man, I'd have to say, you know, I'm loving my time and my memories that I'm creating now with Impact. But, you know, what sticks out for sure is definitely Dragon Gate in Japan, because I was over there. I spent maybe about 4 years going back and forth. And, I learned the language, you know what I'm saying? Like, I learned a whole nother language, something that I never could have even fathomed when I was younger, you know what I'm saying? Coming from Baltimore, Maryland, you're speaking Nihongo, you're speaking Japanese, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. And, you know, just the time learning and being able to get into those big shows like Kobe World or Final Gate, which was held in like big arenas, like 5,000-10,000 people, you know, and getting to experience that, it got me ready for a lot of opportunities that I've gotten in my career, you know, and I could never, you know, repay them enough. Like, that, I look back on that so much.
Well, you know, that period, there are so many guys that are there. I mean, is there a secret? Because, like, I'll watch that, and it's just like everybody here is so fast and so crisp. I mean, that's the one thing that I always notice with Dragon Gate is, like, you know, sometimes I almost feel like they make it so easy because they're that good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy. No, yeah. And then when you're young, like, it's hard to keep up with these, like, and they were like 35, 40 when I was over there. And so, like, it's, and they were still nuts. Like, I'm like, yo, Dragon Kid, calm down.
Yeah, like, Dragon Kid. Like, you watch him and you just go, like, wait a minute.
Yeah, like, whoa, calm down. Like, him and Yoshino, like, I thought I was fast. And I'm like, man, you know?
Like, how does he get so fast?
I don't know. I'm like, somebody put this guy in the Olympics. Like, put him on the meter, bro. Like, something. Like, this dude, like... I can't. Like, yeah, those guys are crazy, man. They're amazing. I don't know what their secret is. It's just hard work, and they really, really care about what they look like and how their image is put out there, you know, to their fan base. And, man, they work, man. Like, they just... train hard every day. They just instill like hard work and their program, you know, and their company.
How close, like, when you're over there, do you get to the fans? Like, are there fans there that like become like your friends, or is it kind of a distant relationship?
Oh yeah, I made so many friends in Kobe and Osaka, and every time I'd come to Tokyo, I'd have friends out there. Like, they're so, like, it's a different vibe over there. Their fans are so, and I'm not saying like the fans over here in America or anywhere else are like rude or anything, but oh man, their culture is just, it's amazing. It's just so welcoming. And their fans really attach themselves to somebody, they're literally your fan for life. Like, there's no going back once you have impressed them. Like, I'd have fans bringing me gifts and pictures and like, it's just, it's a crazy world over there. Like, they really look at professional wrestling as a sport, you know? Like, they take it serious.
Now, what's it like as far as like Germany and England? And would you like to go back there?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. Every time I've wrestled there, like in Germany or Ireland or England, over there in that region, like those crowds are rowdy. You never know what's going to, you don't know if like somebody's going to have, you know what I'm saying, like a couple pints and, you know, get a little froggy, feel a little froggy at the show. You don't know if when you go out there, if they're going to make up some crazy ass song that you can't like even focus, and because it's just so brilliant. And how did the crowd all come up with this all at once at the same time? Like, do you guys all have each other's numbers? Are you guys all texting each other? Like, how, like, those crowds are amazing, and I'd love to go back anytime. Like, Revolution Pro, they were amazing. WXW, amazing. Southside, they were great. All these promotions out there, you know, and it's just great.
Anything else as far as, like, you've got this show, the 24th, you got some TVs leading up to it, which I guess we can't even talk about tickets to the TVs because... No one really knows. I mean, you've got your dates and everything like that, but the big one is the 24th out of Nashville, and you know, Bound for Glory. And what type, you know, again, one of the bigger matches of your career, main event, Eric Young, we've talked about it. So you're getting excited about it.
I'm very amped up, and like I said, the story, this guy, because I pinned him at Slammiversary, you know what I'm saying? He got a little bit jealous. He lost his sanity, if you will. And then he took a chair and demolished my repaired ankle. You know what I'm saying? So something that I worked so hard for and strived so hard for to get back the 7 months after a doctor has told me, hey, you're not going to be walking normally for the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? To come back and then to be thrown into the post and get my ankle Bret Harted and chair demolished and Brian Pillman eyes and all that. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, man, I'm not going to lay down for that. And there's some things that people are going to see if they tune into Access TV, the buildup of this. And, man, I'm going to have something for Eric Young on Battle for Glory. He think he a maniac, dog. But he ain't seen Maniac. All right. You know what I mean?
And this is also a shot at your first world title, right?
Well, you know, I've actually had an opportunity at the world championship for Impact before. But it's not going to be any sweeter. But get Eric Young, because you know what I'm saying? My man has done some things, some dastardly things to myself and Eddie Edwards and even the boss himself, you know what I'm saying? Like pushing him down in the middle of the ring thinking that he's all hard and stuff. Well, you know what I mean? Like, we going in.
Anything else, Dave?
That's good enough, yeah.
All right, so Rich, want to thank you for coming on. Did you want to tell anybody about any social media or anything else before we
any other appearances or anything?
Yeah,
I don't have any social media at the moment, but I'm just saying, hey, check out Bound for Glory October 24th, baby. That's all I want to share because I want people to see that.
And I think. Where do you is it going to be on cable, satellite, and then
everything.
Fight
and,
right
and fight yeah
and fight,
and fight yes sir.
Yeah, all the regular channels yeah
people know
yes sir.
All right, so I want to say thanks to Rich and for Rich and Dave and myself and to everyone. Thanks for listening.